Judge Hamilton, Judge Barrett.
I'm here.
I'm here.
After the argument, we'll have to discuss the conference and where it'll be held. Mr. Ross, Mr. Derby, are you there? Mr.
Yes, Your Honor, Russell Verby's here.
Wonderful. Thank you for being there. Thank you for being anywhere. All right. Case number 19-1999, Yaisen Meza Morales versus William Barr. And Mr. Ross?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm Charles Ross for the petitioner, Mr. Meza Morales. This case involves the intersection of removal proceedings and the U visa, which Congress created for victims of certain criminal activity, particularly domestic violence offenses and certain other violent crimes. Congress wants U visas in general to be adjudicated by a specialized unit within the Department of Homeland Security that's trained on cycles of domestic violence and why victims don't leave their abusers and that sort of thing. Ironically, Congress's good intentions create a bit of a complexity where the U visa applicant is in removal proceedings. The court has had occasion to...
Forgive me, this is Judge Rovner. Mr. Ross, at this time, do you have any information about when Mr. Meza Morales is likely to actually receive a U visa?
I have a little information. My information is limited. My brother may have better information. The reason is that by regulation, people are the numerical cap of 10,000 is allocated per year in order of applications being received. So although, for instance, my client's case was probably somewhat expedited, I know it doesn't feel expedited, but it was somewhat expedited over the normal processing times, it's the order that he filed his application that counts for these purposes. So somewhere is in the neighborhood of 4 or 5 years, but it could be longer.
Counsel, this is Judge Barrett. I have a question about the legal effect of the waiver of inadmissibility by the IJ. So I'm having trouble figuring out, just because of the oddity of the waiver of inadmissibility and the grant of the U visa being separated, figuring out whether, you know, if we take your point of view of the case, it's better to think of this as a situation in which the waiver of inadmissibility simply establishes eligibility for the other kind of relief, i.e. the U visa, which is the way it functions in other contexts like CAT relief, et cetera, or whether this waiver of inadmissibility, in those situations, the kind of relief, the waiver of inadmissibility and then the grant of relief are simultaneously sought. So should we think about this, is it your position that the grant of the waiver of inadmissibility essentially makes him not removable as a legal matter so that the IJ should conclude the case by saying he's not removable? And then if that's the case, what's the point of getting a U visa? I'm just trying to figure out what the legal framework we really ought to be applying is.
Yes, Your Honor, you're getting to the heart of the question. So I think the answer is, it's to be technical, it's not that you're not removable, it's that the removability grounds are waived. And that matters, for instance, because if somebody gets a waiver today and then tomorrow commit some other bad act, or Congress changes the law and the person becomes inadmissible under some other ground, the prior inadmissibility doesn't go away. It's just been waived. But the consequence of a waiver of removal and that all the other cases that have gone before the board have been, you know, that the person isn't ordered removed pursuant to the grounds of inadmissibility that have just been waived. Now, I think you're right.
I'm not able to find a situation that's really kind of exactly on point, because in other situations, it often happens when the immigrant is in LPR. So, for example, you know, if the ground if the grounds for an inadmissibility are removed, then there's, you know, something in place, and the LPR status permits him to stay. This is unusual because there's not an affirmative permission, you know, the visa, that otherwise permits him to stay.
I think that's true. There is a distinction here between the other cases that we are citing and this case. The government can't really point to any situation where the board does order removal after granting a waiver. And there's an implication that the government raises that a case can't be terminated unless somebody's, you know, moving into some lawful status. And if you examine that proposition, I don't think it stands up. For instance, a person who, where the government erred in serving the notice to appear, perhaps as in Ortiz-Santiago, perhaps the government failed to include all the necessary information on the charging document. The consequence there is you terminate the proceedings. That doesn't give the person any legal status. It just leaves them in the same position that they were in, you know, before the proceedings began. And in this case, it would leave the applicant, the respondent in the rule proceedings, it would leave them able to pursue.
When you're saying terminate the proceedings, are you referring to administrative termination like a Castro-Tum issue?
Castro-Tum involves something called administrative closure. I'm sorry, uh-huh. The terminology, but administrative closure is like a continuance without a specified end date. So termination is different. Termination is the end of the removal proceedings. Of course, it's only ended as long as, you know, if the person is ultimately denied you, or if they do some other bad act, and if the government wants to revoke the waiver under D3, they'd be able to restart proceedings and charge my client again. So it's not like a forever termination, but it's a termination pursuant to, the person can't be ordered removed under these inadmissibility grounds that have just been waived. If you can't be removed under those grounds, then termination is the, I'm sorry, if I cut you off, I'm sorry. If you can't be removed under those grounds, that termination is what follows from that. Now, the government.
What would you identify as an appropriate continuance in this case?
So, the government has suggested that you may want to remand this case in light of the court's recent decision a couple weeks ago in Guerra Rocha. Mm-hmm. I mean, the problem with administrative closure first is that the Attorney General says that IJs can't do it anymore. But the problem with the continuance, this judge said, well, how many months should I continue it? 2 months, 3 months? On one hand, it puts judges and the immigration judges into a bit of a bind, right? That how long the immigration judge isn't considered to have authority to order USCIS to decide the case quickly.
Well, the Fourth Circuit in Romero abrogated Castro-Tum, you know, concluding that the board and the immigration judges, in fact, do have the general authority to administratively close cases, right?
Yeah, and we if you reach the question, we would certainly urge you to agree with the Fourth Circuit. All of the reasons that made the immigration judge hesitate to grant a continuance are reasons why it would make sense for administrative closure to exist, because sometimes you just can't quite identify how long it's going to take for CIS to decide the U visa matter. If you agree with us on the first point, then these other questions are, I guess we'd say that the our first argument would be a more efficient way to, not that that's the only issue, of course, but it certainly would be a more efficient way to handle these questions. The case would be terminated at least until the U visa is decided or denied or something. And then the immigration judge wouldn't have to worry about remembering to watch the case on his or her docket, and the judge wouldn't have to figure out how long to continue the case for or how many times the case can be continued.
But I don't understand under that approach, I don't understand why the termination of the removal proceedings could then be made contingent upon the outcome of the U visa. It seems like what you're talking about, again, is the kind of the Castro-Tum route of the administrative closure, which then would make sense as one that, you know, it wouldn't affect the U visa. I mean, or, like, stay with me here. Like, this is stepping through, and I may be misunderstanding because obviously the immigration statutes are incredibly complex, but in the general waiver provision that the judge relied on here, 1182D3A2, it says that in that exercise of discretion, the IJ is essentially granting temporary immigrant status, admitted temporarily as a non-immigrant. So is that what you're arguing should be the result of this, that it would be sort of like a temporary status, because that provision also explicitly gives the judge the authority to condition it upon certain things, and here it could be conditioned on obtaining the U visa? Or am I misunderstanding what that kind of temporary non-immigrant status would be?
Well, the U status is itself actually a non-immigrant status. And so technically, I mean, this goes to your earlier question, Your Honor, that there's a bifurcation here, but the waiver waives the inadmissibility ground, and then USCIS, when they admit the person into U visa status, now they've been admitted as a non-immigrant. We don't know of any reason why an immigration judge couldn't condition the termination upon the, you know, the person falling through on the U visa. But even if, certainly there's no doubt under the regulations that the government has the authority to revoke the D3 waiver grant. And so if CIS a year from now denied the U visa, at that point it would seem entirely appropriate for them to go ahead and revoke the waiver grant and then put the put my client back in the removal proceedings.
So the AG can then revoke the waiver of inadmissibility.
Yeah. In the end, yes. I mean, I think it should be, you know, for some sort of intervening cause, but I see no reason why the cause couldn't be that, you know, they investigated and decided it didn't qualify for use or some such thing. But that is different than the administrative closure route. Administrative closure is like a state of frozen animation. It freezes the case, and it's in that posture, wherever it was, and the removal proceedings don't go forward, but they don't end either. And then, you know, the problem, my brother can speak to this, you know, is where you have a non-citizen who's in immigration detention. What happens with that person if their case is continued or administratively closed? How long can the government keep detaining them? Should the government keep detaining them? These get to be complicated questions, and, you know, they're somewhat easier be resolved if you took our first view of the case. I think I'm in my rebuttal time, so if Court doesn't have further questions, I'll reserve the remainder.
Thank you very much. Okay. Mr. Verby, hello.
May it please the Court, Russell Verby for the Attorney General. In light of Citizenship and Immigration Services having placed this petitioner on the wait list for a U visa and granted deferred action in this case, the petition for review is really moot. The basic position of the petitioner...
But you really didn't want to deport him. You could have agreed to the continuance. So you obviously wanted to keep it live in some respect. You could grant an administrative stay. I don't understand why, if you truly wanted to take him off the rolls, you wouldn't have taken that route.
Well, the only problem is, Your Honor, we can't just simply grant an administrative closure, because under Castro-Tum, there has to be a regulation that a grant that authorizes that. I can go into why the Fourth Circuit's position is wrong, because they omitted much of the language from the controlling regulations that they looked at, but the immigration judge cannot just give a continuance, or shouldn't give a continuance under board precedent that could last, as Brother Counsel just admitted, perhaps 5 years. So there's neither really a continuance that would work, nor an administrative closure that
would work. Why would a continuance of a year at a time be unreasonable? We often see cases where immigration judges continue a hearing for a year or more?
Well, they continue it for perhaps a year because they know that, okay, here's the filing deadline case of the asylum application, or I'm going to give you this amount of time to come up with the evidence you need to support your asylum application. But I don't really recall many cases where they say we're going to give you 1 year at a time or 5 years, as would be required in this case, or five separate continuances for an unknown date down the road as to when a particular visa number is going to become available. So
let's compare, for example, Colorado River Extension, okay, where we've got parallel litigation in federal and state courts, and the appropriate step is a stay. That stay may remain in effect for months, maybe for years, while the other case goes forward. I'm not sure that I see why maintaining a live, executable removal order is an improvement on that situation.
Your Honor, the way that the board has set up its continuance precedent, there has to be, it also comes down to the fact that there has to be the efficient disposition of a case.
Let me interrupt if I could for a moment and see if I can identify my most fundamental problem with this case. You're familiar with the theory of the unitary executive, right?
Your Honor, you might have to help me out with that one.
Everybody in DHS and in the Department of Justice works for the president, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Everybody's part of the Article II executive branch. And the Attorney General and the Department of Homeland Security Secretary both serve at the pleasure of the government. And in essence, those secretaries or the people who work for them are each making each other's job difficult, mm-hmm. in a case like this, right?
In some respects, yes, Your Honor. I mean, we have a track in the immigration court and a track in the DHS, and sometimes those tracks don't always line up perfectly to get things done. Yes, Your Honor.
Right. And so what we've got here is a situation in which the result of the particularized structures set up by regulations and statutes as they are being applied, for example, the reluctance to issue continuances or the new opinion from the Attorney General saying you can't do administrative closure, the result is you've got right hand and left hand within the unitary executive blaming each other for a consequence that is pretty clearly arbitrary and capricious, in that you guys are trying to remove a fellow who just needs to wait a little bit longer to qualify for a U visa that Congress created.
Your Honor, I will, I'll agree with your point that the federal government, I've been in it for 27 years between military and DOJ time, and we're not always the most efficiently run organization in the world, but if you look at the way the regulation is structured for this particular case, this alien right now is sitting exactly where he needs to be, because under ACFR section 214.14D2, once an alien is determined to be eligible but the cap is reached, what you do is you go on the wait list and you get deferred action. That deferred action stops any removal, whether the immigration court has or the Attorney General has no power right now to remove this alien because the deferred action is in place. That's as good
but
as
in these, forgive me, this is Judge Rovner. In
yes,
these
sir.
Very difficult times, the man is waiting for the other shoe to drop. We don't know what the next missive out of any of these agencies will possibly do. And in terms of a continuance, when you have an alien who has been diligent in seeking collateral relief, as the IJ found that Mr. Mazen Morales has been, but the timeliness of the relief available to him turns on the backlog of another agency, shouldn't we be talking about a continuance that is as long as is realistically necessary for the other agency to adjudicate his entitlement? He's entitled to the collateral.
Your Honor, I'm going to answer that question in two parts. And the first part is, like I said a moment ago, this alien under the regulation is where he needs to be and protected by deferred action from removal order. So we can take this case out of the ambit of the immigration court and move it there. However, if the court feels so inclined to do something to protect this alien, what it can do is hold the case in abeyance here with status reports, just like it did in another case with Mr. Roth, Solange Morez versus Barr, docket number 182882. There's another way to handle this case. But my point is that the regulations place this alien exactly where he needs to be under deferred action. And when it's finally approved, section 8 CFR section 214.14C5I then takes over and says the removal order from the immigration judge can be opened, reopened, and moved to terminate. That's
you said that he can pursue a U visa even if he is removed from the country. If he were removed, would he have to file a new application and start from square one, as Mr. Mesa Morales suggests, or would he still remain where he is in line for a U visa based on his prior application?
I've seen nothing in the regulations that address a forfeited application when the person leaves the United States. But with the deferred action in place, there isn't going to be a removal order. We're not fighting to remove this alien. We are fighting for the position that the alien can have a waiver of admissibility alongside an existing removal order. What Mr. Roth wants this court to issue is an advisory opinion that those two situations are incongruent. But if you look at the regulations that govern this, there actually has to be removal authority concurrent with waiver authority. You can't have one without the other, and the two have to exist at one point, especially the regulation that I just cited, Your Honor. Section ATFR 214.14C51 says that you have the removal order, and then when the person finally gets off the waiting list and actually gets their official visa and non-immigrant status, the existing removal order, which had to be waived at one point, is then reopened, terminated, and done away with. So no one's seeking to remove this alien. We're simply seeking to understand that the authority to have an inadmissibility waiver exists alongside the authority for the immigration judge to order this particular alien removed, especially in light of the fact that, let's say, this alien does something right now or down the road that would remove him from U visa status, like failing to cooperate should the perpetrators of the wound that he suffered be captured and prosecuted. Then what should we do? Start a whole new removal proceeding? Why can't the immigration judge at least rely on the existing removal order that there's no longer a basis to waive just for the purpose of getting the U visa? I mean, if this court's decision in LDG set up this whole situation where immigration judges have to do both. They have to evaluate removal and waiver.
But counsel, LDG is on the books, so we just have to accept that. And, I mean, it kind of boils down to, if your position is truly that he ought not be removed while his U visa application is pending, there seems to be wide agreement amongst everyone that the question is just what is the right procedural mechanism to permit him to stay while the U visa is being, until he's finally eligible to get the U visa, maybe 5 years from now.
Well, the procedure that already exists, it's already in the regulation. It's called deferred action, and that's what this alien got as soon as his application was adjudicated.
But that leaves him quite vulnerable.
Yes, with the shoe drop. Well, the other shoe is...
Could I ask you to frame that answer in terms of the language of the regulation you're citing, 214.14C5 Romanet 1?
Let me pull that regulation up, Your Honor.
Okay. The one you've just been discussing.
Yes, sir.
And so the second sentence of that regulation says, for a petitioner who is subject to an order of exclusion, deportation, or removal issued by the secretary, the order will be deemed canceled by operation of law as of the date of USCIS's approval of Form I-918. Does that apply to the petitioner here?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. He's not under a secretary order. He's under an immigration judge order. He falls in the second sentence.
Okay, so then we get to the last sentence that applies to this fellow, right?
Yes, sir.
Petitioner subject, okay, issued by an immigration judge of the board, may seek cancellation. And would the board join in such a motion at this point?
Well, it wouldn't be for the board. He could reopen before the board. I mean, the board could do it sua sponte, or the most likely the ICE counsel may agree as a matter of discretion to join such a motion overcome.
Would you be willing to do that in this case?
If the person is granted their U visa and they're on the list and they're fully complying with all their obligations and they haven't done anything, I don't see why ICE wouldn't, Your Honor.
Is Mr. Meza Morales currently in custody?
Not that I'm aware of. Brother counsel could probably speak to that better than I could.
Okay, thanks.
As I said, the real situation here is, I mean, is there really a controversy before the court at this point when this alien has deferred action, which is due to the continuance? And this alien, I'm sorry, he's already in line for the U visa, so there's nothing left to adjudicate. The continuance was to, adjudicate the visa. All it is a waiting game at this point. And when he has deferred action, that's as good as administrative closure in many respects for this alien. In fact, it's probably better because this case is completely off the docket as opposed to just administrative closure in a Castro-Tum, which keeps on the inactive docket at the immigration court. So there really is no case or controversy before this court at this point because the court cannot really fashion any remedy that really advances this petitioner's interest. If the court is inclined to keep the case here. Go ahead, Your Honor.
One more question.
Absolutely.
At least one more. But the deferred action, could you point me to that in the regulations?
Yes, Your Honor. The deferred action is at 8 CFR, section 214.14B2. It's eligible, but the cap is reached. The alien goes on a wait list and is issued deferred action. And that's what happened.
I don't see the deferred action language there.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes, it's section 2. Wait list. All eligible petitioners who are due to the cap are not granted. New immigrant status must be placed on a wait list. And then if you read down.
USCIS will grant deferred action.
Yes, Your Honor. There it is right there.
Okay.
It's a rather lengthy paragraph.
Sorry. Got it. Thanks. Okay.
No problem, Your Honor. Glad I can help.
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up.
Yes, Your Honor. We would ask that the court rule on the motion to dismiss and find that there's no longer a case in controversy because this court can really formulate no relief that would advance the petitioner's position. But if the court does continue to go forward, there are other options if the court is so inclined as to protect this petitioner and perhaps holding the case in abeyance here with regular status reports rather than trying to say that continuance is appropriate, where even a continuance from the immigration judge is not going to change the petitioner's position because he remains in deferred action status.
Mr. Verby, do you have the name of the case that is being held in abeyance?
The one that I have here is Solache Morales, Your Honor. It's docket number 182882.
Solache Morales. Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Ross, you asked for 4 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. So there's a lot to do. So to begin with, deferred action is the slenderest thread that holds the sword of Damocles above my client's head. The government correctly notes that by regulation, when you're found eligible for a U visa, you're put into deferred action. There's nothing in that regulation that says that deferred action can't be revoked. And the Supreme Court and the University of D.C. says that's a kind of a prosecutorial discretion power, that it's not in the court's ability to reverse. So in short, we certainly would be in a position of total vulnerability to any regulatory or sub-regulatory changes on that score. Mr. Ruby says that deferred action is in a better place than the continuance, but I don't understand that. My client has a removal order that, if the government changes its rules or its approach tomorrow, can be effectuated without delay. Now, I want to go back for a minute. So the government's position, you could say, there's a strong version of the government's position that a week. The strong version says, well, Mr. Mason Morales can just pursue his U visa even after he's deported. Well, you know, Congress, in the statute passed by both houses and the Senate, says the purpose of the U visa is to prevent deportation of U applicants. So that can't be right. The weak version of their argument says, well, we're going to order you deported, but we don't really mean it. You don't have to actually leave. But my client's still here because this court entered an emergency stay order while my client was in the process of being deported. He was, I believe, actually at the airport waiting for a flight back to his home country when the court's order came through. So to say that the case may seem bloodless at this point, but the consequence of the government's view, if you accept it, is that you applicants are going to face removal from the country while their cases are being pending. And it doesn't seem to us any kind of fair answer to say that the judicial or quasi-judicial order that's being entered, the removal order, is somehow lawful only because the enforcement agency isn't going to execute it. That's inconsistent with the nature of a legal proclamation. If the immigration, which is why we argue that the board is sort of abdicating its obligation to decide whether a removal order is appropriate in that case. As to the termination question, what we'd say is the board has given no sound reason why termination isn't an available option. And we grant that there are, you know, distinctions in other cases, but at a minimum, the board should be required, if it's going to say that termination isn't inappropriate, the board should be required to give some reason, some sound reason, why that should be so and why.
Is there any other situation that you can think of where the board would terminate a proceeding for removal on grounds of admissibility with kind of caveats that you were identifying before, like subject to, you know, the denial of the U visa in which it can be reopened? Is there any other situation in which it does that?
Well, case can be terminated. It's a rare situation, but where there's been some sort of fundamental violation of rights, such that the evidence that the government has of alienage gets suppressed, that's very rare.
That's different than what we're talking about here, right? Because we're talking about here saying that you're inadmissible, but oh, never mind, that will be revoked if in the end USCIS denies the U visa application. So I'm just wondering if there's an analogous situation in which you're granted the waiver of inadmissibility and the proceedings terminate, you're not removable, but they're terminated conditionally so that they can be reopened and then you can be removed and the waiver of inadmissibility goes away subject to something happening by another agency later.
I know of no good case on this, on all fours here. That's the short answer to your question. There's none against us and there's none for us. The authorities that we've cited are all for other waivers, and as Your Honor pointed out, in other factual situations. Here we have a statutory bifurcation where the judge can't grant the U visa itself, and so the question is, well, what happens? And the government says we should order deportation and then let the person take it up with the enforcement agency whether that's actually effectuated, and we don't think that can be the right answer. Certainly a continuance or administrative closure is the way, the other, you know, option for, you know, trying to reconcile.
I see the options, counsel. I'm just trying to figure out where the board gets the legal authority, and I can see why, as a practical matter, your option one is attractive. I'm just struggling to figure out where the board has the legal authority to do what you're saying and what the legal effect of such an order would be.
Well, the statute does give the board and immigration judges authority to grant waivers and to determine inadmissibility. And so part of the question, I guess it's, this is a somewhat circular answer, but it's our view that it's in the nature of a waiver to waive inadmissibility, and the government's view sort of takes that waiver and gives it effectively no effect in the removal proceedings. Your inadmissibility is waived, but it's not waived. And maybe the board can justify that, but we don't think they have at this point. And so, you know, to the extent, Your Honors, I mean, these are these are great questions, and they're ones we think the board, you know, should have been grappling with, and there's no evidence that it did. It just sort of given it to Dix. Well, you know, we can't terminate because you were found inadmissible. But the waiver was granted. That's really not an answer, respectfully. So we think we would ask the court at a minimum to remand for further analysis on that issue. And of course, even if the court were to rule in our favor on the first point, the board could always come up with a different analysis under Brand X that could, you know, obtain deference to that new interpretation.
If, Mr. Roth, what if we took Mr. Verby's suggestion and simply hold the case while issuing a short opinion explaining why we're doing what we're doing and deal with similar cases in similar ways? If the immigration judges don't want to hold it on their dockets, we could do it on our docket.
It worked in this case because Mr. Reyes Morales was pro se before, in his hearing before the immigration judge. We, a legal services agency, ended up taking on his case. It works as long as you imagine all of those U visa applicants in the removal proceedings somehow getting counsel or somehow figuring their way through it pro se. But that's an awful lot of maneuvering for somebody to be pro se, and so the consequence of that approach is certainly that some people are going to be fall through the. And indeed, the sub-regulatory authority says that they're supposed to stay removal while the U visa is pending. There had been a U visa waiver grant, and nonetheless, they denied the stay and didn't tell us about it until he was on his way to the airport. You know, if we hadn't been in a position to file an emergency stay motion within less than an hour, he would have been gone. And so happened to Mr. Solace is better than, nothing, but it doesn't seem like an adequate solution overall. I mean, of course, it's in the court's prudential judgment how to handle these matters, but it doesn't seem like that's. We don't think that's ultimately the right answer. A continuance or we don't agree obviously with the government's contention that a continuance or administrative closure accomplishes nothing. At a minimum, the board could hold off on entering the removal order and leave the case either at the board or at the immigration judge level.
Okay, I want to thank Mr. Roth and Mr. Verby. We all hope that your families and you will stay well. The case, of course, will be taken under advisement. And